Hello, homemakers. Welcome to the Art of Home podcast, where we are exploring how homemakers cultivate a place to belong. I'm your host, Allison Weeks. I'm a wife, a mom, and I have been a homemaker for 30 years. If you are a regular listener to the podcast, welcome back and thank you for tuning in to another episode. If you're new here, we are so glad you found us. Here at The Art of Home, we are seeking to inspire and encourage you in your practice of homemaking. Whether that happens full-time, Monday through Sunday, or in the margins after your 9-to-5. So we just kicked off our 6th season last week with a homemaker portrait, and today we're beginning our 2-part deep dive into the art of sewing. I am excited to bring this series to you all. I'm chatting with Jan Lockhart, who you might remember from her homemaker portrait back in season 2. And in part 1 of this deep dive, we're going to go into tools, sewing machine basics, fabric, patterns, and much, much more. And then next week in part 2, we're going to talk specifically about sewing clothing, both adult and children's, sewing for the home, and sewing as a business. Before we start, I want to give you a few fun historical facts about the history of sewing. Sewing is one of the oldest of the textile arts. Before the invention of spinning yarn or weaving fabric, archaeologists believe people across Europe and Asia sewed fur and leather clothing using bone, antler, or ivory sewing needles, and the thread they would use would be made of various animal body parts, including sinew, catgut, and veins. Doesn't that sound delightful? For thousands of years, all sewing was done by hand. But as early as the late 1700s, inventive thinkers started to begin working out how to mechanize sewing. The world's first sewing machine was patented in 1790 by Thomas Saint. By the early 1840s, other sewing machines began to appear. Okay, you're going to hear me do my very best with a difficult French word here. A man named Barthélemy Timonier introduced a simple sewing machine in 1841 to produce military uniforms for France's army. Shortly afterward, a mob of tailors broke into Timonier's shop and threw the machines out of the windows, believing that these machines would put them out of work. By the 1850s, Isaac Singer developed the first sewing machines that could operate quickly and accurately and surpass the productivity of a seamstress or tailor sewing by hand. So the French tailors did have reason for concern. However, eventually, hand-sewn garments became associated with high fashion, couture, tailored, and custom-made garments that only the wealthy could afford. By the 20th century, sewing machines were more portable and affordable for the middle classes, and the demand for patterns grew. Wikipedia says, women had become accustomed to seeing the latest fashions in periodicals during the late 19th and early 20th centuries, increasing the demand for sewing patterns even more. American tailor and manufacturer Ebenezer Butterick met the demand with paper patterns that could be traced and used by home sewers. The patterns, sold in small packets, became wildly popular. Several pattern companies soon established themselves, and women's magazines also carried sewing patterns and continued to do so for much of the 20th century. This practice declined during the later decades of the 20th century when ready-made clothing became a necessity as women joined the paid workforce in larger numbers, leaving them with less time to sew, if indeed they had an interest. Today, the low price of ready-made clothing in shops means that home sewing is confined largely to hobbyists in Western countries, with the exception of cottage industries and custom dressmaking and upholstery. Sewing as a pleasurable hobby has gained popularity, as attested by the BBC television show The Great British Sewing Bee, on air since 2013, which, by the way, cannot be viewed anywhere in the United States, which I think is an atrocity because that is the best show ever. I digress. Anyway, sewing of all kinds, hand, machine, quilting, embroidery, has grown in popularity throughout the early part of the 21st century. Fast fashion has, for some, raised ethical objections, added astronomically to our landfills, and left most of us with a longing for not more but better choices in what we clothe ourselves and adorn our homes with. Renewed interest in slow living and returning to old ways has people dusting off grandma's vintage Singer and scouring YouTube for how to sew videos. Well, we are here to encourage you that while sewing can seem intimidating to the beginner, it's a valuable skill to pursue. And like cooking, once you have the fundamentals down, you can modify and be creative to your heart's content for the specific needs and desires of your family and of your home. Whether you're a complete novice or a seasoned sewist, we know you will enjoy this discussion about the art of sewing. All right, I'm back with Jan Lockhart, who you probably will remember from season 2. Her homemaker portrait aired way back when. We are going to talk about sewing. Mm-hmm. We're going to go into a deep dive on all things sewing. I'm very excited for this conversation because Jan has been sewing for a long time. So Jan, why don't you give us a little history about sewing in your life? How long have you been sewing?
Forever. I really started probably sewing in the 4th or 5th grade. Mm-hmm. I'm from Illinois, small farming community. 4-H was huge. And at that time, there was boys 4-H and there was girls 4-H. And girls 4-H focused on sewing and cooking. And we started sewing about 4th or 5th grade.
Okay, so we have a lot of international listeners. So I want to explain, what is 4-H? It's like literally the number 4 mm-hmm. dash the letter H. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
4-H's stand for heart, home, health, and I don't remember, happiness, I'm not sure. But it's literally 4-H
four H's. Okay.
That goes together. And it's everything from people show animals mm-hmm. to canning to cooking. It's all kinds of stuff.
Cool.
That's what
okay.
it is. Yeah.
And that is where you learned how
That's
to
That's where
sew.
I learned, yes.
Okay. So what kind of sewing have you done or do you typically do?
Started out because of 4-H and because my mom sewed mm-hmm. A lot of garments, things that you wear. Mm-hmm. You know, I sewed everything when I went to college, sewed my own clothes, then moved into home stuff when I had my own home and I wanted yeah. pillows or curtains or something. I started sewing those. Then when I had my own business, I went into evening wear and bridal stuff. Mm. So I've really done it all, mostly clothing.
Okay, awesome. And we're going to talk about all of those fun things. Before we get into some of the nitty-gritty details, let's talk about some reasons to sew. Why should you sew? Why is it a good idea?
Oh, there's lots of reasons. If you're creative, it's a wonderful outlet. Mm-hmm. You can find something that you like and you can think, hey, I can do that. I can make that. I can make that for myself or for my kids or for my home. Mm-hmm. It can save you money. Not necessarily,
yeah.
but if you're very creative and if you have a good stockpile of things, you can save money mm-hmm. if you sew. It's a good release. It's
yeah.
good alone time. You can put your headphones on. You can listen to your music, your podcast. You can just get away. Mm-hmm. Lots of reasons.
I think it's very, sewing to me can be very meditative.
Very much so.
Just because there's a method to it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the preparing of the materials and the laying out of the fabric. And it's.
And the ironing and all of the stuff that
yeah.
it's just.
It can be very
you
calming.
Can get in a zone and just. Yeah,
exactly.
Be by yourself.
Do you feel like basic sewing is a necessary skill for homemaking?
I absolutely, yes. absolutely, especially if you have kids who, you know, are so hard on clothes.
Yeah, they are.
And you want the hand-me-downs, and so the younger one has to wear them, so you have to mm-hmm. fix them. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. So for some people, nowadays, we are starting to become aware that, first of all, most of us have too much clothing. There is a glut of clothing waste. Mm-hmm. And so as far as sustainable and ethical fashion is important to you, mm-hmm. that can also be a side benefit of mm-hmm. sewing.
Very much so.
And the fact that you have control over not just how your clothing fits or the items that you're bringing into your home, but also where it's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're doing it yourself, you can even source things in an ethical, sustainable way by using garments that have been discarded or by using fabric that you get, you know,
yes.
from the Goodwill store or wherever. So mm-hmm. I'm not here to make an environmental statement, but for some people that's really important. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it is just sewing to me is kind of the quintessential reuse, recycle, repurpose practice in the home.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the other reason to sew that we're going to get into more in part 2, the episode 2 of this series, is that it can be a potential source of income.
It can.
And that's something that you have experience with.
I have.
So we're going to get more into that later. But what we're going to talk about in this episode is we're going to get into the basics and more than basic. But if you've never sewed before, or you have some experience, or maybe you're even a more seasoned sewer, we hope that you'll gain some insight and you'll be able to take something from these episodes. But we're going to talk about sewing supplies. We're going to talk about fabric patterns, sewing economy. So a little bit about how you can save money, because sewing can become a very expensive mm-hmm. hobby if mm-hmm. you're not careful. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about organization and give you some fun sewing war stories from both Jan and I. And then maybe a little bit about expectations in sewing and then how all of this relates to the art of home. Okay, let's talk about supplies. What would you consider to be the essential supplies for sewing? Must-haves.
You don't need a lot. You mm-hmm. really don't. You need a dedicated pair of fabric scissors.
Okay.
Dedicated fabric scissors. These aren't the scissors that you keep in your junk drawer that the kids use to cut out their paper with. But it doesn't have to be an expensive pair mm-hmm. of scissors. A basic Fiskars, mm-hmm. which you can get them for under $20.
Yeah. And but why, let me ask you, why do they need to be dedicated?
Because it dulls them. When you cut paper, it dulls them. And especially if you're using fine fabrics,
yeah.
like just a thin fabric or a sheer something, mm-hmm. you'll mutilate the fabric. If you have a scissors, it does not cut very sharp.
Okay.
So just keep a dedicated scissors. I also like to have a small scissors for mm-hmm. like snipping
yes.
into little bitty tight spaces. So just a little bitty scissors works. You need pins, fabric pins. Mm-hmm. Safety pins are a nice thing to have. You don't necessarily have to have safety pins, but you need straight pins.
Right.
You need a tape measure, a good iron.
Yes. Let's stop and talk about that for a minute.
Okay.
Why do you need a good iron and what constitutes a good iron?
You iron all the way through your sewing project. At least you should.
Yes, I agree.
To me, you can tell when something has been made if they have not pressed it.
Okay.
Because not only do you have to press the wrinkles out of the fabric, but mm-hmm. you have to press each step as you go, because mm-hmm. that just kind of finishes the look. So pressing is very important. And iron, you know, you need an iron that will do steam.
Yeah.
You need an iron that has a little bit of weight to it,
yes,
I think.
Yes, it needs to be hefty in
a
your
hefty
hand.
Hefty iron so that you can get into. And I like the irons that have the sharp.
Yes.
Point mm-hmm. at the tip, because mm-hmm. you know, if you're pressing out a dart or if you're pressing a seam sleeve, you need to get into that point. And right. a nice rounded iron, you could, but you're going to struggle a whole lot more. So if you're going to buy an iron, that's what I would recommend you buy.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a little bit of an investment. Mm-hmm. I think the last iron I purchased was maybe about $60.
I think mine was too.
And you can get really very expensive, way more, up into the hundreds of dollars. Mm-hmm. That's not necessary.
Yeah.
You can get a good quality iron, mm-hmm. like what we're talking about, for about $60. And another thing about irons to keep in mind, this is especially important when it comes to, you've just bought this beautiful piece of fabric and we're going to talk about that more. You're going to take care of it, clean it before you sew with it, and then you're going to iron it. And if you have crud inside your iron and you go to iron this lovely fabric and then it stains.
That crud comes out onto the fabric. Yeah.
So a couple things to keep in mind is care for your iron. Take care of your iron. Make sure it's clean. I personally always use distilled water in my iron mm-hmm. because we have really hard water
yes.
here.
Mm-hmm.
And the mineral deposits from the water will build up in that iron.
Yeah.
And then when you go to iron something or spray out some steam, it'll just send these chunks.
So frustrating.
And it's really frustrating.
Yeah.
So it's very important to take care of your iron and to have a good one and to take care of it. Okay.
And while we're talking about irons and you're mm-hmm. talking about those kind of things, I always have an old piece of fabric, like an old piece of sheet,
yes.
you know, 24-inch piece of sheet. Sometimes fabric, you need to see if your iron's going to spit. So I lay that down first and then you iron on that. And I just always have it. So that's just something.
Yeah.
It's not an essential.
That's a great tip.
But it is kind of nice to have just stuck somewhere close to your sewing stuff.
That's a really good tip.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we talked about irons and scissors.
You need a seam ripper.
Yes.
Because you will be making mistakes.
I saw the cutest thing one time. I think it was like a little cross stitch years and years ago. And it said, as you sew, so shall you rip.
That's so true.
Yes. Very true.
It's very true.
Even the most experienced seamstress.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to have to rip out seams.
Oh, yeah. I rip out things All the time.
I think you can get one for like a dollar.
Oh, they're not expensive
at all.
They're cheap. No, very cheap. Yeah. So you need one of those because you will do that. It is also nice to have either fabric chalk or they have fabric markers because you will be doing marking. You'll need to mark things sometimes. So that's, I would consider that an essential. And
the thing about, also I wanted to say about fabric chalk or tailor's chalk, you should have more than one color.
Yes.
Because traditionally it'll come in white. But if you're dealing with a white fabric or a light fabric, you need to have a color that will show up. Yeah. I'm personally not a huge fan of the blue, traditional blue pencil, fabric marking pencil, because I've had fabric where it didn't come out. So that's another thing you might want to do is find a little piece, scrap piece of your fabric, test your chalk or your marker that you're using on it and make sure you can get that out. Because that's pretty devastating if you've marked up the fabric and it doesn't come off.
So. They do have these new fabulous pens that go away with heat.
Oh, really?
And they come in like a 4-pack of colors and it looks just like a pen. You take the top off like a pen, you mark it. The first time my friend did it, she's marking on my fabric. I'm like, she goes, no, watch. And she takes over to the iron and the heat just makes it disappear.
That's amazing.
It's marvelous. I just ordered my, I ordered some on Amazon.
Okay. So. And we're going to have some extensive show notes for this episode. I'm going to link all the stuff that we're talking about. Ones that we recommend, and I will definitely make sure I link that because I have to get some of those. I have never heard of that
before. They're amazing. Just amazing.
That's pretty awesome. Okay, is there anything else that we didn't cover in essential supplies?
You need a hand needle, something if you're going to do, you know, mending, hemming. You need a needle. You need basic color thread, white, black, gray, cream.
Also, if you're going to be doing some hand sewing, a thimble.
Yes.
But, you need a thimble. If you've ever tried to push a needle through more than a couple of layers of fabric, you can't.
Yeah.
You'll have, you know, holes in your fingers.
Do it on the countertop. Yeah. You know, push it through on the countertop. So yeah, you need a thimble.
And there's lots of, you can get traditional metal ones, but they also have little rubber ones that fit on your fingertips and stuff. So those are definitely a must.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some of the things that are not necessary, but nice to have.
Okay. There's, I don't even know what they're called, but they're those foldable pattern. I wanted to look this up to see what they're actually called so that you can cut out your fabric. If you only have space to lay it on the floor.
Oh yeah. A fabric board, like a fabric pattern cutting board.
Yeah. It's like, it folds up like four different, you know.
They're huge.
Yeah. And you can lay all your fabric out on your floor. You can cut it on the floor. If you want to save your countertop, you put it on your countertop. Those are nice to have because they also have inch measurings on, markings
they
on
have
it.
They have a grid. So that you can line things up perfectly square.
Yeah.
And they're typical. I mean, I've only seen them made of cardboard.
I've only seen them made of cardboard too.
Yeah. They've been around forever. I actually have two. I found a vintage one at Goodwill one time.
Oh, nice.
It was still in like this plastic sleeve with a little handle.
Yes, nice.
I was pretty excited. I think I paid a dollar for it.
Oh, nice.
Yes, but those are great because they will protect the surface that you're working
those
on.
Those are good. Let's see what else. Rotary cutters are nice. There's a thing called a hem ruler. It's a little metal ruler. It's probably about 5-6 inches long, and it has this little red tab in the middle that you can slide up and down to help you measure your hem. That's nice. So you don't have to pull a ruler out.
Yep. Let's talk about pattern weights versus pinning a pattern.
Okay.
Why would you want pattern weights?
Personally, I don't like pattern weights because it moves. They move for me.
Okay.
I will almost 95% of the time, I will pin it. But if you are only sewing something, if you're making curtains and you just need to keep it straight, you know,
to do a long straight line
pattern weights.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Okay. So those are nice to have, but not necessary.
Right.
So let's talk a little bit about sewing machines.
Okay.
All right. What can you do? First of all, what can you do without a machine?
A lot of things. Hemming, mending, fixing little rips in seams. You can do all of that by hand.
I mean, you can do it. Technically, you could do anything
technically,
by hand.
Hand.
Oh, I was going to look this up too. I don't remember when the first sewing machine was invented.
For the home. I'm curious like about that too.
I think it was a Singer, probably. But the trestle, the ones that had the foot pedals. I mean, those are old, maybe 1800s, I would think.
I would think.
Mid to late 1800s.
I would say late 1800s, yeah.
So before that, folks, people were sewing by hand.
Everything by hand. Everything by hand.
Yeah.
So you technically can do a lot. You can, but you can go a whole lot faster with a machine.
That is true. Very true. Okay. So what should you look for in a basic machine?
If you're just starting out, keep it simple. Mm-hmm. You just want a machine that does your basics. The more bells and whistles you have, the more things can break down. Right. And the more you can get things messed up by changing dials and changing knobs. So if you are just starting out or if you are just buying your first machine, I would say you want one that zigzags. And I think they all zigzag now.
Pretty much, yeah.
Because that gives you a nice finish to your edge if you know you don't want it to ravel. You might want it a buttonholer. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be doing things with buttonholes, one that gives you various feet.
Yes.
That you can, you know, put a zipper in, you can put an invisible zipper in, you can put a buttonhole in, you can put buttons on. There are feet that let you do buttons. And really, other than that, if you're just starting out, that's really all you need because everything else is just technique.
Right.
You can do, you know, you can do a blind hem on a machine if you have the foot that goes with it. Mm-hmm. So I'd say the fewer bells and whistles, the better.
Okay, good. That's good to know. How about taking care of your machine?
If you have been sewing something where the fabric has a lot of fuzz, if you're done sewing it, open up where the bobbin goes and you will see all of this fuzz.
and lint
in there. And so if I have done a really fuzzy project, I will clean it every time. Mm-hmm. I'm getting a little worse about that because I'm getting a little lazy. And you can hear your machine. It makes it, it will be much noisier. It will rattle. It will clink. It will clank. So you just take that little brush that comes in. You open up that bobbin compartment and you get all that little fuzz out of there. Mm-hmm. Take your needle off. Clean the hole out really good.
Right.
You know, just that's it for basic. If you do a lot of sewing and if you do a lot of changing of your tension and all of that stuff, I would get it professionally tuned once every year or so.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what I do just to put everything back into working order because sometimes I'm like, what was that supposed to be said at? I don't really remember.
Yeah.
Then you guess and then it's just a mess. But do your basic cleaning often. Doesn't take but, you know, 30 seconds to clean that little section out down there.
Yeah.
And then get it cleaned when it's really dirty.
I want to make a plug here for buying your machine from a sewing machine dealer.
That's very smart.
If you can. They have all price ranges. Mm-hmm. Most dealers, reputable dealers, will carry beginner line from a very affordable price. And they may even have refurbished used ones that they have tuned up. And these are people who know the insides and outsides. They've been trained on the machines. They know exactly
very
how to
smart.
Make them work well. And you could get a nice machine at a very affordable price. And the benefit of buying from a dealer is that you have access then to their mechanics.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you bought from them, typically they'll give you a discount on your annual cleaning.
Yeah.
If you buy a new machine from a dealer, this has been my experience, they usually have a class, a free class.
Yes.
That they
very
give,
helpful.
That they will teach you everything your machine does. You come to this class, maybe a couple of sessions, and then they will show you exactly how to use all the functions on the machine. So you might pay a little bit more than if you buy it at Walmart or Joanne or off of Amazon, but you're getting an aspect of customer service that's going to be so helpful.
Good point.
And just, I've had a machine before where I just thought, okay, my machine is possessed. I do not know what I'm doing wrong. And I just called them and I said, this is what it's doing. Please help me.
Yeah.
And they were able to tell me over the phone, you know, try this, try this, try this. Yeah. So I can't recommend that highly enough.
Good advice.
Okay. And so another thing I just want to touch on really quick, since we're talking about machines and cleaning and them doing weird things. I have been sewing for over 30 years, and I never knew, you probably know this already. I did not know that when you thread your machine, okay, you thread it, it goes from the top of the machine down into the machine and into the needle. That's the last place. If you're going to unthread it, okay, you do not clip the, you don't, okay, if you're going to unthread it, you don't pull it from the top. To take the thread out of the machine, You never grab the spool of thread at the top of the machine and pull that thread all the way through from the base where it's into the needle all the way out the top.
I did not know that.
The reason is because it messes up the tension.
You're kidding.
Mm-mm.
Look at that.
It is never supposed to come out of the top of the machine. It's only supposed to go down. So think like gravity. It's supposed to go down. And if you want to take, if you're changing your thread out to a different color or whatever, you clip it at the top, clip it right by the spool. Okay. And pull it from the bottom, from the needle.
Wow. I had no idea.
There you go. There's your tip for the day.
No idea.
I didn't know this until about a year ago when I had got a new machine. And yeah, that's when I learned it. They were like, no, 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 don't pull it from the top. It messes up the tension.
Good to know. Okay. Oh, now I hope I can remember that.
Yeah. All right, we're going to move on and we're going to talk about fabric, the wonderful world of fabric, which is huge,
huge
and overwhelming.
It can be.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what, where, and how to buy fabric.
Okay.
We're not going to get into too much detail about specific fabrics because we're going to cover that more in the second episode where we talk specifically about sewing clothes and sewing for the home. But just in general, what should we be thinking about with fabric?
If you're starting out again, and I kind of always preface everything, if you're new to this,
right,
go to a fabric store. Mm-hmm. Go to Joann's, go to Hobby Lobby. If you know what you're looking for, you can buy online. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to tell if you're looking for something and they say, oh, it's visqueen, and you're like, what in the world is that? You know, it looks pretty in the little swatch that they've told you on, but then you get it and you're like, holy smokes, this is upholstery fabric. I can't sew my daughter's skirt out of this. So go look, feel.
Yeah.
See what you like, find the weight. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Joann's, Walmart.
Walmart has
fabric.
Selection.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you can even get fabric at resale stores.
Yes.
They will have them. Goodwill will have bolts of fabric. Our little resale store up here will have bolts of fabric that you can buy. So
I think the point that you just made is really important to know the different types of fabric. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, it can be overwhelming because there are so many different types and they have specific names. But there are some broad categories. Mm-hmm. So you should know, you know, there's your natural fibers. Mm-hmm. So things like cotton and linen. Those are things that are naturally occurring, right? Mm-hmm. In nature. And then you have your synthetics and you have blends.
Yes.
You should kind of understand the basics of those, the basic properties when we throw out words like that. Mm-hmm. We need to understand what that means.
And how they're going to look in a finished.
Right. How they're going to drape, how they're going to lie,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How easy they'll be towards in construction or not. You know, you probably mm-hmm. don't want to start out your first project with a stretchy fabric.
Mm-hmm.
That's more advanced. Mm-hmm. Anything with spandex or anything that's got a stretch to it.
Stick to your cotton or your cotton poly blends. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely know, understand fabric.
And I mean, it's not, I'm not saying go do a crash course and you need to know all the types and all the things,
no.
But just that as you approach it, you need to understand that different fabrics have different properties mm-hmm. that are going to cause mm-hmm. them to behave differently mm-hmm. in whatever it is that you're sewing, whether mm-hmm. it's a garment or a pillowcase or, you know, drapery or whatever. You need to understand the differences.
You can even look in your own closet.
Yes.
If you have a blouse that you love yes. how it feels, look and see what it's made of.
That's a great tip.
And then you, mm-hmm. you know, oh, okay, well, this has got 65% polyester, so I don't want to get 100% cotton, mm-hmm. probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really great tip. Okay, and we're going to talk a little bit about the care of fabric, which is something to consider when you're buying, when you're purchasing for your project, mm-hmm. is you need to understand, how do I take care of this fabric? Mm-hmm. How is it washable
mm-hmm.
or is it dry clean only? Mm-hmm. That's really important to know.
Mm-hmm. The end of the bolt will always tell you that. Mm-hmm. If you go to the store, if you look at the end of the bolt where it tells you what the price is per yard, it will tell you what the fiber content is and it will also tell you care instructions. Mm-hmm. Dry clean only, hand wash,
yes.
machine wash.
And a quick tip on that is when you purchase your fabric, take a picture of the end of the bolt of the fabric.
I wish I had learned that a long time ago.
Well, we didn't have cameras
That's
with
true.
Us all the time.
We didn't,
a long
but
time
I didn't
ago.
Even, I could have written it down.
Yeah.
And I didn't. And then you get, you're like,
well,
This feels like it should be dry clean only.
I know,
can I wash this?
Yeah, definitely take a picture of it so you can remember how you're supposed to take care of that fabric.
Yeah.
What about scraps and leftovers. So a very popular thing now in sewist, and by the way, I'm saying sewist because—
as opposed to seamstress.
That is the appropriate term mm-hmm. now to talk about people who sew. A sewist, in the sewist community, it's very popular now to do what's called no-waste sewing, where you use the piece of fabric and you don't waste any of it, and you create this amazing garment. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to talk about that, really, because that's a whole other thing. Mm-hmm. But you will have scraps and leftovers if you're not doing a no-waste pattern. What are some things we can do with our scraps and leftovers?
Oh, they can be fun. You can do matching doll outfits if you're making an outfit for your little girl. You can do hot pads. You can do placemats. Mm-hmm. You can do hair bows.
Yeah.
You can do gift bags. You can make little tied gift bags that you mm-hmm. could put gifts in. Lots of stuff you can do with that. Make a quilt.
Yeah, I was going to say, traditionally, mm-hmm. they would make quilts out of the scraps.
Which is what I'm starting to do, yeah.
Oh, we're going to talk more about that later. I'm excited. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about patterns, all right? Patterns can be like trying to read hieroglyphics for some of us. Yeah. So how about, where do we even begin with patterns? Where should we be looking? How do we buy them? Where do we start?
Wow. Again, I would stick to an actual physical pattern if mm-hmm. you're just starting out.
Okay.
There's a lot of online patterns available, and my daughter, who has just started sewing, really likes them. Maybe it's because I'm used to an actual pattern. They're confusing to me. Mm-hmm. I feel like they don't explain things well. But your basic simplicity pattern will have everything you need right there.
Okay. So for the absolute novice who knows nothing and is not at all versed in the world of sewing, there's kind of four major pattern houses, would you say? Design houses?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that would be?
Simplicity, Butterick, McCall's, Vogue.
Okay. At least in the U.S.
Yes.
Those are the big players. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of other ones, Berta and...
There's Quick Sew,
yeah.
Which is new, and they, very simple.
They may be owned by some of the bigger names.
Well, Simplicity and Butterick, no, McCall's and Butterick are the same company.
Oh, really? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in all of those have like... some sort of easy mm-hmm. section. So when you go to the fabric store, we're talking traditional. You know, I know some of you may be looking at things online, but if you're going to like go to Joann or go to Hobby Lobby or wherever you're getting Hancock fabrics, you go back. It's usually in the back of the store. There's a table and there'll be these giant books mm-hmm. and they're full of photos. And if you find a photo of a garment that you like, or they also have home decor sections, the books are usually divided up by gender. And then they'll have like a children's section, then they'll have like
costume section,
and then a home decor and a gift section maybe. So you find the section you're looking for, you find a pattern you like, and there'll be a pattern number. And then you go to the little metal drawers mm-hmm. that are usually near that table and you find the brand and then you find the corresponding number mm-hmm. and hopefully they have it in stock.
Mm-hmm.
And then you pull that pattern out. So all of those books will generally have like an easy sew mm-hmm. section mm-hmm. that you can go to. And they'll have easy sew women's, men's, kids, home stuff. Mm-hmm. It's a small little section within the bigger book, mm-hmm. but that might be a good place to start. Mm-hmm. But would you say that with those major brands, there's some that are a little harder and some that are a little
yes.
easier?
Yes.
So how would you distinguish?
Just as the name says, simplicity would be your easiest.
Okay.
And you can get some beautiful patterns, mm-hmm. beautiful patterns. You can also get your very basic A-lined elastic waist skirt mm-hmm. on Simplicity. That would be the easiest. Mm-hmm. McCall's and Butterick are probably intermediate. And okay. then Vogue
yeah.
always has been, always will be the more complicated.
Yeah, it's just more advanced technique,
yeah.
more advanced design.
Yeah.
It's just going to be a little bit more challenging mm-hmm. to do a Vogue pattern.
But also more expensive.
And they are more expensive. That's mm-hmm. true.
Yeah.
Very true. And patterns can be, you have to like take out a second mortgage to buy patterns. But I know that they're always on sale. Mm-hmm. I think they're always on sale at Hobby Lobby. I'm not sure. They're always very cheap at Walmart, but Walmart doesn't have as big of a selection.
Yes. It's
very limited.
Very limited.
And then Joanne is usually running some kind of sale.
And then also, if you go look through the pattern book, and like you had said, hopefully it will be there.
Yeah.
Let's say you have picked out Butterick pattern 752. Nobody has Butterick 752. You mm-hmm. can go to Butterick.com
yes.
and order 752, and they will have great sales.
Yes.
That's, always.
So. That's true. That's very good.
And you may even do that. You may check before you buy it at mm-hmm. Joanne or Hobby Lobby. See if you can get it cheaper.
Yeah.
Right. Directly through the company.
Right. Okay. Cool. We've picked out our pattern. We have our little pattern envelope in front of us. And then we turn it over and we see all of this information on the back of the envelope. What do we do with that? What does all that mean?
Wow. There is a lot of information on the back of that pattern. Mm-hmm. And we may talk about this later, but my suggestion would be always buy the pattern first, take it home and study it.
Mm.
Don't try to buy everything unless you've been sewing for years and you know exactly yes. what you need, what you have, what the pattern says. Take it home.
Yeah.
Figure out what size you need. Figure out what pattern on the pattern you're making, because they all have different views, A, mm-hmm. B, C, D, E. Mm-hmm. Am I making A or am I making D? Figure all of that out, make your notes, then go back to the store and buy what you need.
That's a good tip. And maybe that's where buying online, buying your pattern online comes in handy. Because honestly, I mean, just to go sit, unless you just love hanging out at mm-hmm. the fabric store, yeah. which I do, but
mm-hmm. I do too.
You know, if we're talking to busy moms here,
yeah.
you don't have time to go hang out and peruse the books at the but if it's 10 o'clock at night and you've got a spare yeah. 30 minutes,
yep.
you could look online and then order online.
Yep.
When it comes in, you can study it. Like you're saying, I think that's a really great tip.
Yeah.
Because there's been many a times I've opened up the pattern in the store.
Oh, me too.
And I have all of the instructions opened up and I'm trying to figure out, you know, the layout, and then I'm trying to make sure I have everything I need.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds, it'd probably be way more efficient to.
Probably is. Although, like I said, you're usually there by yourself. There's not many people back in the pattern section.
No,
so, yeah.
not typically.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll get more into the nitty gritty details of reading a pattern specifically for clothing versus home sewing and all the things you need to consider when we get into that in part two of our series. So let's talk a little bit about economy with sewing, because like we said, you can save money with sewing, but you have to be pretty intentional. Mm-hmm. And you have to be intentional to not lose money sewing.
True.
Because it can be really expensive.
It can be really expensive.
I would say even don't go into sewing thinking, I'm doing this to save money.
Because you're not.
Because you're probably not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we get back to the sort of ethical, you know, we have fast fashion now. Mm-hmm. In the past 20 years, I'd say that's been this phenomenon where clothing is so cheap.
Mm-hmm.
It's costing somebody something somewhere along mm-hmm. the supply chain. But for the consumer on this end, you can go to Walmart and you can buy
oh, yeah.
something for just a few dollars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, it's not going to last very long.
Yeah.
And I had a story here that I wanted to share. My grandmother-in-law, so this is my husband's grandmother, who has been sewing her whole life, said to me when we were first married, my husband and I, she said, you know, I used to sew all my children's clothes, and then it just got to the point where I could buy it. It was so much cheaper and it just wasn't worth it, all the effort to put in. But she said the quality is just not the same. I mean, she knew that.
And that's very true.
But so let's talk about that. Let's talk a little bit about what are some things we can do to help cut the costs.
You talked about patterns being so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have friends that sew, mm-hmm. swap patterns.
Yeah.
Because the good thing about patterns is they don't make them one size anymore.
They're usually like all of the sizes.
Like 2 to size 20 is in one pattern.
Yeah.
So if you're careful about how you cut it out, mm-hmm. you can pass your pattern on to your friend and you can say, hey, I made this skirt. Now you can go ahead and make this top.
Right.
Because the patterns are the good chunk of what you're going to spend on the mm-hmm. item you're sewing. You can also share notions, mm-hmm. which isn't a whole lot, but when you get a pattern and it says you need bias tape,
mm-hmm.
and you buy a whole thing of black bias tape, and then you use 2 inches of it that just sits in your notion drawer.
Right.
So make an inventory of things. And then when you're going, go with your friends and say, hey, oh no, I have that at home. Don't worry about it. You can have mine. We're going to swap. Do that. You know,
we should probably define notions. We've used that word a couple of times and I realized we didn't define what that is.
Notions are all of the things that go, besides the fabric, it's your zipper, your buttons, your applique, whatever you want to put on it. Anything that is not the fabric would be your notions, thread, all of that. The pattern back, back of the pattern will tell you all of the notions that you need.
Okay. If you need snaps, if you need buttons, it'll tell you exactly the size of button that you need, the exact size of zipper that you need.
Yes.
Thread. I mean, all of that would be considered
those
notions.
Those are called notions.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that for the listener. Another idea about where to get patterns cheaply would be thrift stores and garage sales. There's always, almost always, there's a little section in the back that's got some patterns. Now, they might be dated, but an A-line skirt is an A-line skirt. In 1973 or in, you know, 2022.
The photography may look different on the front of the pattern, but it's still an A-line skirt.
So, and some people love to sew with vintage patterns because they're looking for that vintage vibe. So that's a really fun thing
to do. And
also
resale stores will have patterns.
Yes. So that's a great place to look for that. So sewing with friends by sharing patterns and, fabric swapping too.
Yes. If you are making yourself a skirt and you're not doing the, you know, no waste sewing, you're going to have waste.
Right.
So you give that to a friend who maybe is making some gifts and needs it for hot pads to give to her mother-in-law for Christmas.
Or baby clothes.
Baby clothes. Yep.
Things that require less fabric. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Or if you're like me and you collect fabric, because you just can't pass it up, you might have quite a stash. So doing something like a fabric swap.
Great idea.
All your sewing friends, everybody bring you fabric that you need to part with because it's just been sitting there for 2 years and you haven't done anything with it.
Yep.
And do a fabric swap.
And so that's also a good little tip. If you do buy fabric and you don't really have anything in mind for it yet, put a little note on there how much you bought.
Yes, that's true.
2.5 yards.
Yeah.
Then it's just right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Because a lot of times I'll buy a piece of fabric at Goodwill or a thrift store. And usually they'll tell you how much is on that, how much is on that roll or in that little bundle of fabric.
Yeah.
But that's a good reminder to make myself a note. Because when I bring it home, I wash it. And, and I just fold it up and I have a little stash that where I keep it all. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
How about repurposing things? So maybe using old clothing to make new clothing.
I have seen the cutest on Pinterest. I have seen where people take dad's shirts and turn them into little girls' dresses. And I think it's just precious. You can actually use the buttons in the front.
Yeah.
So, you know, a man's shirt has a lot of fabric. If you're just making a little girl's dress, it's got a lot of fabric in it. So you can do that. Skirts by, you know, I have actually gone to Goodwill and found the cutest skirt, cutest fabric, and the ugliest skirt. But you know it's got tons of fabric.
Yes.
And I've used that. If you're creative, you can come up with a lot of things.
Okay. What about, do you save, if you have an item of clothing that is beyond repair, what about saving parts of the fabric for another project or maybe even taking the buttons off?
Buttons are usually all I will save.
Okay.
If they're cute buttons. If they're generic buttons, I don't bother. But if they're really pretty buttons and a good size, absolutely. Save those.
Yeah. Just put them in a little button box.
I mean, first of all, we used to love my mom's button tin. She had a little, you know, cookie tin like this. It was filled with buttons and you got to look through that and find the matching buttons.
It was like treasure.
It was.
It was like treasure hunting.
Yeah. But there are people that do save a lot of the parts, but I just, honestly, I don't.
I think you would have to know, buttons are multi-purpose. You can do a lot with buttons and it's great to have a collection of them because you never know, even on a piece of store-bought clothing that loses a button,
right?
I'll go searching through my stash to find something close enough to match to replace the button if it didn't come with a replacement. But I would say if I was going to save a zipper out of a pair of pants or something like that.
I mean, if you're really trying to save money, absolutely. It's a basic zipper.
Yeah. You might be able to use it on any number of things, not just another pair of pants. You might use it on, I don't know, a pillow or something.
Anything. Yeah.
Okay. Good ideas. Okay, let's talk about organization in regard to sewing. Because just based on this conversation we've had so far, you can see there's lots of pieces and parts, and you can very quickly have a mess on your hands. So first of all, what about if you have a dedicated space, what do you need for a basic setup? Really, even without a dedicated space, what do you need for a basic setup to have a sewing session, to sit down and sew?
Place to put the sewing machine.
Yep.
Table to put the sewing machine. Someplace to plug it in. Someplace for your ironing board.
Yeah.
Plug it in. Good chair.
Yes.
You're going to be sitting for a while.
A comfortable
chair. Good light. Good lighting.
Yes.
And that's, and space to work. So a folding table, a dining room table.
Right. So if you don't have a room dedicated to sewing that you can just keep set up all the time, what are some portable sewing station ideas that we could recommend?
Besides a folding table.
Yeah.
Lots of tubs, bins, baskets to put stuff in.
Right.
Because if you're only, if you only have an hour during nap time, and you have to get things out and put away quickly, you bring out your three bins. One of them has the fabric. One of them has the supplies. One of them has everything else. Then you know when you're all done, you take that bin and that table and you just scoop it all back into that bin and you're done.
Yeah. I think that's really good. Just to have a designated storage container of some sort.
Yes.
That you can just easily put things back in, put the lid on, and it'll be secure and nobody's going to mess with it and things aren't going to get separated.
Yeah.
Another thing that I used to do is I would take, so if I had cut out a pattern, and so I had my all my pieces already cut out, and that was maybe all I could do that day. So I would take all of those pieces and I would either drape them over a hanger or I would clip them on. You know, if it was like a pants hanger, you could clip them all together. But usually I would drape them over a hanger and then hang them up in the closet. That way all of those pieces stayed together. They didn't get all, because I took the time to press them.
Yes.
As we talked about. So I didn't want to fold them up.
Right.
And stick them in a box.
Yep.
And then have to press them again when I took them back out.
Yep.
So I would lay them over a hanger.
Good
the
idea.
Other thing you could do is those long rough totes that fit underneath your bed.
Oh, yeah.
They're usually really long.
Really long.
So
good
even
idea.
If you had a long skirt or a long pair of pants, you could lay that whole piece down in there without having to fold it in half.
Good
and
idea.
And create creases.
Yeah.
So that would be another thing that you could do.
Yeah.
And bonus, you can store it under your bed. So it's out of the way.
Out of the way. Out of sight.
What about other storage ideas for whether you have a designated space or not? Some ways to store things.
The thing that I used a lot when I first started sewing for a business and had a lot of projects going at once is those hanging shoe racks. Not the kind where you put like, you know, it's got place for four shoes horizontally, but it hangs vertically.
Yeah.
And they're about 5 inches wide,
right.
I think. Then I could take my fabric, my pattern, and my notions and stick that in there. And then I could do it for the next one and the next one and the next one.
Okay. So you're talking about the ones that are more like a shelf.
Like a box.
Or like a box.
Like a box. One, you know, one box right on top of another.
And they hang.
And they hang. They hang from your closet. Then you can put all that stuff back and you can see at a glance, oh, I got to get started on this, you know, this outfit right here. Or you can also do that if you have, there's a great sale at Joann's and you bought four pieces of fabric. You're like, oh, I forgot about that piece of fabric. Well, now you can see it because it's sitting right there.
Yeah.
I did that a lot.
I love that. Using vertical, using your vertical space.
Yeah.
In ways like that.
Yeah.
Speaking of using storage, hanging storage things that weren't necessarily meant for sewing, I got this idea from my grandmother who got it somewhere online. I don't know. She saw this hack somewhere where you, I think I might have mentioned this to you before. It's a jewelry organizer. Okay. It's
yes,
a hanging jewelry
That's
organizer.
Brilliant.
And it's usually double-sided and it's got clear pockets, little pockets that you would put little pieces of jewelry in. So there's probably, I don't know, 50 pockets on one side. They are the perfect size for storing spools of thread.
That's brilliant.
So what I do is I put the spool of thread with its bobbin, matching bobbin, inside each little pocket. And I have them like color coordinated all the way down.
That
the
is
thing.
Brilliant. I've got to do that.
And I just thought that was so smart.
It is. It's so smart.
Because they do make different storage solutions for thread. Some of them hang on your wall and they, you know, the little spokes stick out and you stack them on there. Mm-hmm. Those are cute. But again, if you don't have a space for that, mm-mm. what I love about this system is it's literally taking up, I don't know, 2 inches of space.
Yeah, that's great.
And it hangs in a closet randomly that I don't, you know.
And you see at a glance, oh, there's my red thread.
There and it's protected from dust.
Good point.
In those little clear pockets. They don't close, but they're mm-hmm. pretty well protected mm-hmm. in there. They don't get all dusty like they would if they were sitting yeah. on the wall.
That's a great point.
So I really love that tip. That's a great one. Okay, what about organizing our patterns? Are you the kind of person who tries to fold the pattern back up and put it in its original envelope?
It will be 100% the lines that it was when I took it out of the pattern.
How do you even do that?
It takes me a long time, but I am crazy about that.
Oh yeah. My gosh.
I don't know why. I have to do that.
Because okay. if you don't, your pattern's this fat and then it's just like, oh.
Okay, so let me tell you what I do.
Okay. I take an envelope, like a, I don't even know. I'll have to link it in the show notes there. It's bigger than 8x10, but it's about that size. I don't know. Maybe it's 11x14. Anyway, it's bigger than the pattern envelope originally. Mm-hmm. All right. And it has a little clasp, a little brad that keeps the flap closed on the top.
Okay.
And so I take my pattern, mm-hmm. my original envelope, and I cut it so that my front side and my back side are two separate pieces.
Mm-mm. Okay. I see where you're going with this.
I tape the front side or glue it or whatever onto the front of that envelope. Smart. And then I do the back on the back side. So basically I just create my own new envelope, but I keep the original front and back. I affix them to the front and back of my bigger envelope.
And then you can fold it any way you want.
Exactly. It's much easier. Much easier.
It's true.
So that's how I do that. But that's where smart. Do you keep yours?
I have pattern boxes.
Okay. And that is a thing. They make box. Are they cardboard? Or are they
cardboard?
Okay.
Cardboard. I have every pattern I bought since I.
How do you organize them? Do you organize them by?
I organize them like I have a.
By the brand?
As my collection of patterns grew, I would have to redo it. But like I have a girls, a costume,
okay.
a casual wear, a skirt.
So it's by type. Mm-hmm. And then. Inside, I'm an organizing person.
There's no organization.
There's no rhyme
inside.
Or reason mm-mm. within the inside. Because I'm thinking there's no, because they're probably all different brands and numbers. You couldn't really do it that way.
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting. Yeah. I love to know how people organize their things. We're going to tell some sewing war stories.
Must we?
Yes, we must. Because we want everybody to know that, like we said, as you sew, so shall you rip. Mm-hmm. You're going to have some major failures. Mm-hmm. That's how you learn. Mm-hmm. That's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. We would wish that you wouldn't, but we know you will. So we're going to just share. We're going to be vulnerable here. So what's a particular fail that you learned from, Jan?
Well, what I want to say, the very first one I'm going to tell you is because no matter how long you've been sewing, you're still going to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. It was not that long ago. I was making flower girl dresses for a girl I work with and put the sleeve in this little girl's dress, this big puffy sleeve, and it was in backwards. Mm. And I went, oh, man. So I had to rip it, and it's delicate fabric.
That's so frustrating.
Had to rip the whole thing out, and I put it back in. Backwards again.
Oh, no.
So you still make mistakes. I've been sewing a long time and I still make mistakes, but I've made some mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah. So have I. Okay. So one of my stories is when I was first learning how to sew, my mom was always a sewist. She made a lot of my clothes but my mom was also, she worked full time as a nurse and then she was going back to school about the time that I was really interested in learning how to sew. Yeah. I needed to learn because I was in theater and I needed costumes. And then specifically for a play that I was in, I needed an apron, like a tie. It was a pioneer time. So I needed to tie on an apron. So I figured it out. It was not a pretty apron, but it was theater, so it didn't really matter because it was a costume for the stage. It was far enough away. But I got to the point where I wanted to make like an actual outfit that I was going to wear in public. And I had bought the fabric and I had all these plans. And this was before the internet, people, okay? So I couldn't just look up a YouTube video. And I didn't have any books I learned later on to go to the library and check out books, but I didn't do this at that point. I was just going to figure it out myself. Well, I could not get my seam straight. And I was so frustrated. I tried and tried and tried. I just ruined the fabric. And I ended up telling my mom, you know, I just don't understand how I can't get the needle to stay straight and the fabric to stay straight in the thing. And she's like, well, you know, there's those lines on the metal thing, the stitch plate. Those are seam guidelines. Like you're supposed to follow. I mean, something so basic like that. And the moral of the story is, if I'd have just asked my mom to help me
in the beginning,
she would have been happy to help me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was being stubborn and I was like, no, I'm going to learn how to do this myself.
Yeah.
But yeah, just don't be ashamed to ask for help.
No.
You know, if you get stumped, call your grandma or your mom or somebody, you know, your sister, somebody, you know, who sews and ask them.
Mm-hmm.
Better yet, if you can like sit under them, watch them and have them watch you because YouTube is awesome and it's a wonderful resource, but there's nothing quite like having someone stand over your shoulder and watching you do it and say, no, actually, why don't you try this? Or, you know, let me just show you this little trick.
Right.
That just makes all the difference.
Because a lot of sewing, which you don't realize until you're in there, is manipulating the fabric as it's going through the machine. And like you said, you really can't tell that by watching someone on YouTube because they're just going because they're not thinking about it. But if you're watching a new sewist and you're like, okay, can I just make a suggestion? Why don't you put your hands and then it, world of difference.
Yeah.
World of difference.
Makes all the difference.
Yeah.
So be sure to ask for help.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about an achievement, a sewing achievement that you're proud of.
Again, there's a lot of them. Probably just a simple thing is all of the dresses that I made my daughter for her Easter, you know, Easter Sunday. Mm-hmm. She had beautiful dresses and I was just always so proud of them. Those weren't difficult, but probably the proudest, two things. When I was sewing for other people, there was a bride who came to me and she wanted a dress. She was on a very limited budget. And of course she had this grandiose thing she wanted and I wanted to help her. Mm-hmm. She had the whole bodice, that was back in the 80s, you know, when the bodices were heavy and lace and beaded lace. Well, she couldn't afford the beaded lace. Mm-hmm. So we made the dress, I added the lace, and I did all the beading myself. And then I added it onto the train on the back, and it was hours and hours and hours. But it was beautiful when it was done. So I was very proud of that. But then also one time, somebody came to me, and she had a picture out of Vogue magazine of this green velvet and satin dress that had this jacket with a stand-up collar, and I recreated it. And I don't know how to this, and I don't have a picture of it. It makes me so sad. I never did get a picture of that. But when you do something like that, like I said, my daughter's dresses, I'm so proud of those. When you can look at that and go, I took a bolt of fabric, I took 3 yards of fabric, and I made this. Mm-hmm. That's a good feeling.
It is a really good feeling.
Yeah.
Probably. I have a couple that I'm particularly proud of. I haven't sewed nearly as much as you have, but I did make a Roman shade one time.
Oh, good for you.
I was very proud of that. And it took me a long time.
A long time. Those are hard.
And I had four little children. I think I had a one-year-old at the time. Actually, this was when I was much younger and I had a lot more energy.
More energy. Yeah, I know that.
But I was really proud of that. And I made a flower girl dress for my daughter to be in my sister-in-law's wedding. And that, I still have that. And,
oh, wow.
You know, maybe somebody will get to use it one day. And it's, I was very proud of that one because I had never done anything like that before. But I just want to encourage people too that, you know, like I said, it took me a long time to make that Roman shade because I had four young children and I only had, you know, 10 minutes here, 15 minutes there. And when it comes to sewing, it's okay if you can only do it in bite-sized chunks. You'll eventually get it done.
You will.
It's just going to take a little bit longer.
Yeah.
So, So that leads very well into the next section that we want to talk about, which would be sewing expectations. Having some realistic expectations about sewing and whatnot. So what are some important things to remember?
You can't get it all done in one day.
Yeah.
You may not get it done in 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because unless you're under a tight deadline,
there's
no hurry. What's the difference, you know, if you wear the dress this Sunday or you wear it a month from now?
Mm-hmm.
Be okay with that.
Yes. And I would recommend do not put yourself under a tight deadline. Mm-mm. So if you've never made a bridesmaid's dress before, don't promise somebody, oh yeah, I'll make my bridesmaid's dress. Mm-hmm. And you know, no. Don't do that. Mm-mm. Don't do that to yourself. Mm-mm. Definitely be careful.
Realistic expectations. Yeah. You do have to set very realistic expectations of what your abilities are and what your time is. Mm-hmm. Because if you have little ones at home, like you said, you have maybe 15 minutes, you maybe have an hour at nap time, and then it's when they go to bed at night and then you're exhausted. So don't put that kind of pressure on yourself.
Right. So be realistic about what your capabilities are, what your skill level is currently, what kind of time you have, and also what kind of budget, like you mentioned with the bride that you were sewing for. Uh-huh. Just be realistic in your expectations according to
those. And lower
your
expectations. Mm-hmm. And that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, the dress may not have, I don't know, all of the little things that you want it to have, but you finished the dress and you're wearing it and you're very proud of it.
For sure. Also, we want to make sure that we understand and expect that it's a process that we need to be patient with. Mm-hmm. The learning how to sew and the sewing itself. Mm-hmm. We need to be patient with how long it takes. Talk just a minute about the prep with sewing.
Hmm.
Like, how important is that?
Very important. It's like anything. Prep is just as important. Mm-hmm. If you buy your fabric and you know it's going to be a garment, I would suggest take it home immediately, wash it. Mm-hmm. You know, it may need to be pressed a little. Keep in mind that you're going to press it as you go. But if it's horribly, horribly wrinkled, you're going to want to press it because you don't want those wrinkles to set in. Look over the pattern. Study the pattern. Mm-hmm. When I was first sewing, and even for years, if I still do this, if it's a pattern that I've never done before, I will, like you said, open up the whole pattern, read through the whole pattern and say, okay, what's gonna trip me up here?
Yeah.
Take the time to do that. Because if you're in the middle of it, you're frustrated and you're gonna wad that whole thing up and in the trash it goes.
Especially if you're working in 10, 15, 20 minute increments.
Uh-huh.
It you will maximize the time that you have available to sew if you've done that prep work.
Yeah.
Of, you know, look through all the steps in the pattern, make sure you understand if there's a technique in there that you've not done before, go YouTube it.
Now's the time to YouTube it before you start.
Yeah, for sure. And then understanding that, to me, prepping for sewing is a lot like prepping to paint a room.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to do about 50% of the work in the prep.
Yeah.
And you just need to know that. You're not going to actually put needle and thread to fabric until you've done a whole lot of steps beforehand.
And it makes the actual sewing
so much
smoother. Yeah, it does.
Yeah. So that's important to understand and keep that in mind.
Yep.
So let's end our time, this episode, kind of reflecting on how sewing is part of the art of home. So how do you think that sewing can add to this practice that we call the art of home?
If you're literally sewing for your home, like curtains or pillows, you're putting a unique touch onto your house that nobody else has. True. So that when they come in, they see a piece of you. And it's really the same if you're sewing garments too. Mm-hmm. They are seeing a piece of you because two people can take a pattern and put them side by side when they're done, and you have no idea it's the same pattern.
Right.
They've picked different fabric. They've picked different colors. And it's a reflection of you, and it's a reflection of what God has made you, the things that he has given you. Are you a bright person? Are you a muted person? Are you a, you know, whatever person?
Right.
It shows who you are.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I think it's also a way to express, it can be a way to express love and care for the people that we share the home with. Mm-hmm. You know, one of my very favorite things to do when my kids were growing up was to create costumes for Halloween.
Oh, me too.
You know, and we would sometimes make them from patterns. But one of our favorite things to do was to like go to Goodwill, see what we could find. Okay, so we had a theme. Everybody's going to be something related to like knights and princesses this year. So, you know, we would go find fabric, some kind of something at the Goodwill that kind of looked like chainmail. So I was able to make like a little chainmail vest that looked like a little suit of armor, you know, that kind of thing. Getting our kids involved was really fun for us. And it was a way for us to bond.
Yeah.
In
absolutely.
A fun and
it really
way.
Is. So family, it's a family thing.
That's just one example of that. Yeah. So how can sewing helped to bring beauty and meaning into this sort of ordinary tasks of homemaking, do you think?
I think it can bring color.
Sure.
To your life. Yeah. It can bring, if you look at your life as tasks, that's all you have, that's all you do all day long is tasks. And, you know, I'll talk to my daughter and my daughter-in-law and they're like, I have to fix them dinner again. You know, it's like just tasks. Yeah. But when you bring in something like sewing, mm-hmm. it's a task, but it's not a, I have to do this task. It's mm-hmm. I'm adding this to my life because I want to bring a little color.
Yeah.
And to me, that's huge, especially when you're home with little ones all day long. Mm-hmm. Like I said, in the very beginning of this, I said, it's a creative outlet.
Sure.
And a healthy creative outlet.
Yeah, absolutely. And they get to watch you do something mm-hmm. creative and like you're feeding your creative soul and they get to see you do that. And mm-hmm. I think it makes a big impact mm-hmm. on your kids.
Yeah.
I love to meditate. We talked about this before, but the meditative sort of calming act mm-hmm. of sewing, I feel like that really helps me as a homemaker to just kind of find a happy place. Mm-hmm. And,
yeah.
you know, if I can sit down for a few minutes with a piece of fabric and some thread and just do that meditative act, it'll just calm me right down if I'm in a bad place mm-hmm. or I'm having a bad attitude about my work in the home. That was just, and that's not for everybody. I'm not saying it's the cure
right.
all
no.
for every
no.
situation.
No.
And some people, sewing is not their thing. Mm-hmm. And that is okay.
Absolutely.
But if it's something you're interested in, I just would highly recommend that you think of it that way too, as a way to just sort of calm your mind and your body and give mm-hmm. something for your hands to do mm-hmm. while you're sitting in front of the TV at night with the family or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just really great. So let's end with a piece of advice that you would give to someone just starting out in sewing.
Start simple.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said earlier, lower your expectations.
Right.
If you see a dress on Pinterest and you're like, I'm going to make this dress, you know, you can, but at some point you may have to go, you know, it's not going to look like that. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be okay because finished is what counts. In my opinion, finished is what counts. If you can take fabric and a pattern and turn it into something, you mm-hmm. have made a huge accomplishment, I think.
Yeah.
And you need to pat yourself on the back, mm-hmm. but have realistic expectations and start simple.
Okay. Good advice. I second that. All right. So we will be back next time with part two of the deep dive of sewing, where we're going to get into much more specific detail on sewing clothing, both for adults and for children, sewing for your home. And we're going to talk a little bit about sewing as a business, which is something that Jan has a lot of experience with. So thank you very much, Jan. I look forward to part two.
Me too.
We hope you've enjoyed this in-depth look at the basics of the art of sewing. I know we covered a lot of information in this discussion, and so to help you remember some of the things we discussed, we have created a free resource for you. We're calling it the Art of Home Sewing Handbook. It has a list and description of the essential tools we talked about. It has a couple of pages of common sewing terms with definitions, which sometimes the pattern companies and the tutorials assume that you know these terms, but if you're a beginner, you probably don't. So this will be a handy reference for you. Machines can also be very intimidating, so we created a diagram of the basic parts of a machine to help you learn your way around one, as well as a list of trusted machine brands. These brands range in all prices. Some of the brands are a little bit more on the economic side, and some are on the higher end side, but almost all of them have an entry level machine. Now, you might pay a little bit more for a Bernina machine entry level than you would pay for a Singer or a Brother machine entry level. But they're all trusted brands and you're going to get a decent machine if you go with any of these brands. We also have a fabric cheat sheet guide to remind you of the basic types of fabric and what they are best used for. And finally, we have a 2-page project journal template where you can record all the details about your sewing project. It's just a helpful little tool for the process of actually making an item, but also it's a great record of everything that you've made. And you may want to go back and reference things later if you want to make that pattern again, or just to have a record of all of your creative endeavors. It's nice to look back on those things. This resource is available at theartofhomepodcast.com/sewing, and it will be linked in the show notes below as well. Thank you for listening, for sharing, and for giving us your feedback through our email and our new voicemail link, which you can find on our contact page on the website. We love to hear from you. We want to hear your ideas, your thoughts on what we've covered and maybe what we could cover in the future. If you have any topics you want us to address, are there questions that you would like for us to ask our guest that we are not currently asking? Please let us know. And if you're not receiving our weekly newsletter email, you are missing out. You will be the first to know about what's coming in the new season. If there's any new developments, new resources we're working on, or new ideas that we're having, we tell the newsletter audience first. I often share parts of my own homemaking story and favorite recipes and my favorite books and resources. It's just a great little extra freebie resource put out by The Art of Home. I call it Homemaker Happy Mail, and it shows up in your inbox every Friday morning, and it will only cost you your email. And speaking of costs, we are happy. And when I say we, I'm talking about me and my husband, because that's your dynamic duo team here. We are happy to offer this podcast and the companion resources for free. It's a ministry in our minds. It gives me something to do in these empty nest years. It's a passion project, and I can be creative, and I absolutely love doing it. But it does take a lot to put it together, and it does take resources to put out. So if you find value in The Art of Home and you would like to support the show, help cover some of our costs, you can leave us a tip. That's the one way you can financially support us right now. We have a virtual tip jar over on Buy Me a Coffee. You just go to buymeacoffee.com/theartofhome. There's also a link down in the show notes. But I wanted to talk to you about this today because we're going to be exploring some ways that our listeners could give on a monthly or annual basis to help support the show, to partner with us in this ministry of giving encouragement and inspiration to homemakers all across the globe. We don't know exactly what this is going to look like, but we're thinking some sort of membership situation where if you give monthly or annual support, you become a member and you get member perks, you get access to members-only content, possibly a member roundtable discussion that we would turn into an episode and broadcast on the podcast. I don't know. I have lots of ideas. We would not change our current content. This does not mean we're thinking about putting up a paywall so that you have to pay money to access what we've been putting out. That's not something we want to do. We want to create a way for listeners like you who have benefited from the podcast to kind of pay it forward so that more listeners can hear, so that we can pour even more resources into the podcast and the things that we make to go along with it, just to make it even better than it already is. So I don't want to create a membership or some kind of program that doesn't serve anybody. So I need to hear from you guys. What do you want? What are your needs? What would be meaningful for you? Something that would be worth it for you to partner with us financially. I want to hear your ideas. You can leave me a voicemail, or you can send me an email, or you can leave a message on our contact page. Just go to theartofhomepodcast.com/contact. And yeah, tell us what you think. We want to know. Well, that is it for this episode of The Art of Home. Wherever you find yourself today in your homemaking journey, just know that we are cheering you on. You are doing an awesome job. And the work that you do in the home really matters. It matters to God. It matters to your family. And it matters to make the world a better place. We'll see you next week with our deep dive on sewing part 2. Until then, keep practicing your art of making a home.